The commission meeting for July 6th, I can't believe it's July 6th, to order. It is now about 6:35. I think everyone signed the sheet to come in, so we'll just do a quick roll call. We have just a quorum, just enough. So,
David McDevitt, here, present.
Gary Schaefer.
Here, present.
Maria Lamana.
Here.
And Mark Schneider.
Here.
All right, and we have Dean Benny, Andrea Logan. So you guys should have the meeting minutes from May in front of you. Does anyone have any comments, suggestions, edits that they'd like to make? No?
What are the second meeting minutes? That's
yeah. Okay, anyone opposed? All right, accept it. I think we might move through this pretty quick. So today, we have, we'll start off with public comments. Like always, it doesn't look like anyone from the public is here, so no public comments, really. We have a presentation from Mr. Benny, and then we're going to go around and talk about our working groups, give each other updates. It sounds like the communication team has something to present for us. There's also a staff presentation. Local source control for Mr. Patterson. Is he coming in a little bit?
He is. He's ironically on a response call, a cooking oil spill.
Oh.
But he did set up kind of some visual aids for you to kind of look at as an apology for being a little late today. So we may, we have to work the agenda around him a little bit.
Okay.
To do that, but I think he'll be here relatively shortly.
What was it also?
Skippers.
Highway 99?
Yeah.
Skippers.
And Minnehaha.
Oh.
For 63rd.
Did truck roll over or something?
No, it was cooking oil is all I know.
Yeah.
But I'm
He wasn't sure. I'm sure he'll come back with an interesting report
for us.
I mean,
that's everything on the news. So we got a fan book involved in that.
Not worthy of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll see when he gets here. We also, looks like we'll be talking about the Vancouver Public School District project, supporting the Clean Water Fee Waiver Program. Mr. Brennan will be presenting that as well. He'll also be presenting the biennium budget discussion, and then talking about the Clean Water Fuel Visit Plans discussion. And then we'll be open for public comments again if anyone shows up, and then hopefully we'll be up here. So let's go ahead and start, Mr. Brennan, with the department. Service changes.
Yeah, so our last meeting was a week prior to kind of a proverbial mushroom cloud in the, where it was decided that environmental services would be dissolved and that the three major parts to the department, vegetation management, clean water, and solid waste, would be broken up and go to different places in the county where they sensibly fit. For us, clean water was pretty much plug and play. Before DES even existed, clean water was a division of Public Works, and that's all they did was basically said, you're going back to Public Works. The other two divisions was a little more complicated. Vegetation management really was kind of the weed control people. They were habitat permits, wetlands permits, and wetland scientists. So they were sort of broken up into different pieces. Their permitting went back to community development. The remainder of the group predominantly went to Public Works as well. I don't have an org chart with me today, but it's obviously Public Works is significantly larger, and so that sort of necessitated even an org chart change within Public Works, because it just was necessary. We've got a director and no assistant directors for a county our size, which is not ideal. And lastly, the third piece, the solid waste group, and this was probably the most shocking change. Instead of them staying here from the PSC building as part of Public Works, where they were formerly, like us, they went to Public Health. Public Health, of course, has solid waste professionals too, just from a more of a permitting perspective. But they saw a nexus there, and so they will be actually later this summer, early fall. They're going to be moving from the first floor of this building to Fort Point Community Health Building there, which will then open up some floor space for Public Works, who's basically busting at the seams on the fourth floor here, to come down and fill that space. So overall, again, DES as of July 1 is now no more, and sort of in business as usual, as far as that goes. I'm sure you read some in the paper here and there. The folks that were, the administrative group was completely removed from employment. Includes former director Benton, Susan Rice, his admin assistant, Chris Clifford, who's our former liaison here, and then Nick Signati, who's our finance manager. So that was the team that took admin and mandatory admin, which ended also July 1st. So Clean Water Commission, this won't impact us in any small way. We still operate the same way. There is no change. For you, the sites are having a new director and reporting within a different department. There's really no change for us. So we'll see. We'll see what's ahead. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts changes. So, do you have any questions on it? Okay.
Well, that brings us to talking about our working group.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I first joined this, was appointed, it was seemed like the mission of the commission was to hold public hearings, back from the time it was formed, some kind of oversight or, what they were doing and reporting opinions and things like that to the county manager. Or at that time also they had the county commission, board of commissioners. And so I don't know if we have to rewrite our mission statement because of, the Department of Public Works has, I don't know how this integrates with the Department of Public Works and what our responsibilities are for the county manager who basically sponsors this group. And so that's something I think that we're going to need to find out. Talk to the county manager about it or whatever. Since he is the sponsor of this group, what does he have new expectations or different expectations? Do we have a charter that remains the same over this one division of public works now, where it should be the whole department? What does he want us to do? If we were, holding public hearings and things like that, is that still going to be the same job that the county manager wants us to do as the sponsor of this group or this commission? So that's one thing. I think you're still probably trying to catch your breath from all that's going on, or maybe feeling like you're drinking out of a fire hose, I don't know. But the fact is that if he is the sponsor of the group, the county manager, Mark McCauley, then do we have a different charter in his mind? Do we have different expectations? And I think that's something that we need to address, maybe, you know, because we have just, we have September coming up, and then generally September is the last meeting before, you know, the meeting before the new year, which means we are busy then writing our yearly report and, you know, doing all kinds of things. And I think we need to answer the question is, in the sponsor's conception of as the sponsor's conception of his charter to us changed with the new organization?
Right. I think that's a valid concern. And I know when we discussed, I believe it was almost a year ago, kind of what that mission statement was for us now, because it felt like it's been changing for maybe a little while, even before this change. The impression I got, and I could be wrong on this, was that we were working in more of an outreach capacity. But it is a great question to pose that, in your mind, do you feel like there's any new expectations of us? It sounds like status quo is still going to happen.
Yeah, and Gary, I did ask Mark about this a couple weeks ago.
Who asked Mark?
I asked Mark.
Okay.
Just not specific to this commission, but other like commissions and the Solid Waste Advisory Board. How's that working? There's no change. You know, I'm not he's drinking from the fire hose more than I am. And so, you know, he felt like if in a specific circumstance there was a change that should happen earlier than that he would be getting with that specific advisory board or whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't on his radar, his body.
Okay.
But I can get something more, you know.
Okay.
More
it certainly the Department of Public Works. Their mission statement has now changed a bit, right?
Mission statement is still the same.
Their mission statement is the same.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're just folding back in, and it fits with no changes to their conception of how that department's going to serve.
Well, I don't want to be the authority on that.
I understand. Well, you were saying that you were, you know, and I think that, you know, if there is a change, we need to know about it because everything's going to come up fast, and that's going to be where we kind of start getting our ducks in a row for our final report, which we'll do at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Well, in section 11, it says the bylaws need to be looked at every 2 years, so they're up for review on January.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's really good point. You know, the bylaws reference the Department of Environmental Services, so we really do need to update those. So I think that may be a good chance for us to kind of do a cross check around whether there is a change. My suspicion is though is that there won't be a significant, but it's referenced in here, so it probably is a good time for us to set a subgroup. You know, that's something we want to do and run through this and just clean it up.
That might be something for the research group kind of do for as well.
Yeah.
At this juncture in time, I think we should just continue to march to let we know the order is to be. And we've posed the question, we'll await a more definitive kind of answer and, you know, adjust the course at the time. But we don't want to use the organizational change as a signal that we should stop and wait.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. The only thing I'm saying is, and it may be the fact that he's been so busy with other things, he just really hasn't thought about that. Of course, you said you asked him, and maybe he's waiting for it to shake out a little more to find out, you know, if there are any problems that arise in the service that have not been anticipated. But in but I think it really is right if we're going to be under a commission that's working with a, with different departments, then I think we need to adjust our charter and then maybe run it by him or something like that so that he so that we're all on the same page.
Okay. The other thing that we might want to consider, and we can come back to this when we get to the budget conversation later on, is, you know, did the budget for the current group move over intact and get combined with the budget that they had already in Public Works? And if so, then that's a great thing because it makes it a little easier to understand how structurally and from a budget point of view and from a finance point of view, how the piece parts are fitting together. And I can imagine that the, you know, overall responsibilities and the description of those responsibilities for the head of Public Works may have changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. But as Dean said, his understanding is that it doesn't change this organization really in any way. So I think that's a good thing, too.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just bringing up the question because I'd like to, you know, I just wonder if it's a question that hasn't been thought of, and apparently it's not, meaning it's done a good job in filling the lines, of course, or whether taking a look at the work that we had to find, whether it needs to kind of change, that's all.
Yeah, I think that's very valid, and it sounds like it is up for review. It is up for review in January that there's at least some wording that needs to be changed in there. So, would you be willing to have the research group?
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah, okay.
The research group. Then.
Yeah, okay, perfect. Do that. Anyone else have any other comments or questions?
I guess comments. I think the, at a high level, the, once we kind of shake out the administrative functions and the budgetary questions we have here, there actually could be a lot of synergies between Public Works and the clean water. I think there's a lot of positives to this kind of a move, and it's from the standpoint one of our projects is to look at the capital projects that we see as a priority for the public here over the next 5 to 10 years, and
yeah.
There's not a lot of those projects. You know, we've got a copy of the list. There's not a lot of those projects that have been funded, financed, and so there could be some opportunity to start to think about it in a complementary manner with Public Works. There could be some things that make a lot of sense when you put a larger umbrella over clean water.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of positives that can come out of this. And key for us now is to make sure that we kind of set the environment and the climate to actually take advantage of this kind of move rather than see the negative in it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
We're already seeing what synergies with our engineers. Exactly. You know, just keeping some walls
low.
Sharing it with workers. Yeah.
Well, one of our teams is the outreach. And it certainly there's probably more opportunity for outreach partnerships with Public Works than there would be just with isolated EPSD. So that would be another thing that probably would be to look at.
Okay. Alright. All right, well, let's move on to the working group updates. Let's start with partnerships and research and then move into communication, and maybe that can just lead straight into the communication team presentation, if that's okay with everyone. Do we have someone from all the teams? I think we do. Partnership, is that you, Gary?
Well, apparently, since I think we, what I wanted to do the last time, and
I had talked a couple of times about it is start getting a list of maybe potential partners and you know, go and visit them and see how we might be able to have the synergy to work together to provide you know a better, more robust output of the combined resources than we currently have. Dick, when I talked to Dick about it, he was not, you know, he had, he was still pending trying to figure out how to get that list together. And we haven't done that yet. And so, and that's all I can say, is because, you know, we're going to have partnerships here, we need to know who we're going to go after, let's see if we want to form partnerships. And that, you know, Dick was, I mean, was, had some thoughts about it, but he really didn't have an opinion about it. So that's what we are now with that, is we're still trying to, and now that we have the public works part of it, we have to start looking at those too.
Absolutely.
And so, my next meeting will be something a lot more substantive to report on that. It's a matter of finding out, you know, who we can partnership with and our outcome expectations for each one of those partnerships to make sure that we have a valid plan.
Right. Well, that sounds like a good plan. Do you guys think that that would be possible to have by the next meeting, or do you know?
Well, I have to talk to Dick about it.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm hoping so. And but I can't commit to it without him.
Right. So. Okay. Well, with that, move on to research. I unfortunately have not been as active as I'd like to be, and that's since our last meeting. I don't know if you have anything to add more.
No, other than we did get a copy of the capital projects. I've had a chance to go through it. I think what our target here needs to be is to start having, I don't know if this is a good model to try to work to, but try to start having a kind of a monthly call or a bi-weekly call to maintain momentum, you know, on some of the things we're trying to get to. So that's something we really need to try to think about getting set up. And,
yeah.
You know, one question is one of the objectives of the research team was to research where the communication team can do outreach. Now we were focused on communication. I wonder if we should expand that to the partnership.
I think so.
That may be something that
because,
we should
do. You know, a partnership with what? We don't have communication.
Right. Yeah, it needs to be. Yeah, there's a three-legged stool here. Everything needs to be working in concert.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I know our last meeting we had a little bit of a short running list going for communication ideas to connect with. So I think you're absolutely right. We should start with the mentorship. Yeah. Alrighty.
The communication.
Well, we did a presentation on May 9th. Neighborhood Association Council of Clark County. It was Jeremy, David, Dean, and myself. There's about 20 people there. Very good reception. We definitely were a little more relaxed and engaging in our presentations. So I would assume that we landed in an amazing presentation here. Jeremy was kind enough to get a bunch of questions, and it's nice to have Dean there because of the work it looked like. People were asking about pervious concrete. And the cost of it, how they treat their stormwater, training education, using parks, partner with the conservation district. People asked about their home drainage, bioswales, so they brought their pipes and that kind of thing there. Very interesting questions. The Galanite groups, they had some discussion there. And then they wanted to see us more in, you know, how they have the 4th of July Pilates. Great, and have people on who's there, and wondering about the measures of safety there, and just not kind of, you know, just more visible. Because they thought it was a great idea that we're getting information.
Oh, okay.
And then on May 10th, I intended if local
ecology in the state of Washington. So they get together once a month and they talk about different issues on retreatment and storm and rural washers and all these other issues. So I brought up the fact that we talked about at our last meeting about the landscapers. So they have some good ideas. There's a Washington Association of Landscape Professionals up in Seattle. They've got 300 members. They do outreach, they do certifications. They do a conference every year, and sometimes they have training in best management practices. Another partner for us. They advise if we were going to send out any flyers to do it bilingual. They also mentioned there's a program of the Puget Sound called Don't Drip and Drive, Fix the Leak. And I did find that on my Google on some websites, some information there.
Was that about leaking pipes?
No, it's when you're driving and you're leaking oil.
Oh.
Or if you're using one of these landscapes and maybe you're something should be. So don't drip and drive, fix the leak.
I'm getting kicked out of that.
And then also someone came up with the mobile concrete mixers. There's quite a few businesses in the area. And just making sure they're using best management practices when they're cleaning concrete and dumping it.
Do the people, many people are involved with the home people in that concrete mixer. And I don't know if they provide any kind of a manual or any kind of instruction when they allow somebody who's never ever mixed one before, you know, to come in and rent it. How are they finding to have compliance or best practices involved? There's another thing, too, is that how many people live in East County? Okay. You know that virtually most of the school, in fact, almost virtually all the schools in the Evergreen School District, which is a large part of East County, have drinking fountains bagged over. There's no water available. Students have to bring their own water from home because of high concentrations of lead. And the water tests out now at a pH of about 6 or 5.5. It's supposed to be 8.5 by federal regulations or 9 for the alpha maybe. And the acid in the pipes leaches the metals out of the pipes. And so they're having a real drinking water problem because, and although I'm sure they probably, I live there, so I know they haven't told the residents. School gets its water from the same pipes as the housing developments around it. You know, they don't have separate source pipes from the schools. You know, it all comes out of a common water system. And I don't know, since a good deal of the properties out of that system still are on the septic tanks, what that's going to do as far as teaching in the aquifer, you know, the adult share. It seems like it's hard to get any information. The city water is, Vancouver City Water is the agency that provides the drinking water for Vancouver. The county water doesn't happen until Public Works along Santa Creek. That's what the county water is. So anything below that, Gable Dell and all the way out to the campus is Vancouver City water. And their wells are getting progressively lower pH, which is the acid, which is kind of unhealthy water to drink because it tends to promote disease. So, you know, that I don't know. You talked about a partnership, networking or whatever it was with the city utilities group, and Because I haven't heard any discussion of it. They bring in water for the teachers, but the students have to bring their own water. And they get the water source out of the same source that they get. The water pipes. Some of them water pipes are in the systems. So, they're leaching minerals, arsenic, and lead in the water. So, like I said, most of the houses are on septic system. So what are you doing about this?
Is that in or out of the scope of the purview of this group?
No.
It's not out of the scope. It's out of scope.
Yeah.
Okay. Drinking water.
Well, thanks for informing us of the scandal.
It is drinking water, but like I said, you know, because we're mostly on septic system, I don't know what's happening with that. I understand that.
But you're thinking
things
leaching into the water, like some of the things we
mentioned. Because the water is acid,
yes. It's
the metals, you know, are dissolved by the acid water and leach into the pipes.
Yeah.
So both arsenic and lead.
Yeah.
And maybe something else.
Something too many schools are upset.
No, schools are not. But the surrounding neighborhoods, I mean, there's very dense neighborhoods out there. Most of them are not on the sewer, they are on septic. So they're getting their water, those neighborhoods are getting the same water from the same source as the
school. I'd say the closest we get to that, you know, are the big monster permit that we operate under, grows entirely out of the Clean Water Act. But we do have features called UICs, or underground injection control wells, basically, that it's a mechanism to flush stormwater down the ground, recharge aquifers, and that. So the interesting thing about those is because we're designing something that allows surface stormwater to move down into the ground, now it's no longer Clean Water Act, now it's the Safe Drinking Water Act. So that's what I was thinking of when talking about this.
I did not know that about this.
So any water that would leak from a drain field, for instance, and move down to an aquifer doesn't even touch our big permit that would be Safe Drinking Water Act. Different regulations, and you know, it moves a different direction. Besides those UIC units that we occasionally install here and there, they're not very common. We don't.
Once again, deal with that. All that water south of North of Santa Fe, it's county, some water, we need water. And they just released a report that we all received, and it was full of smiles and good news. But the fact is that they bring the water to 8.5 to 9, and it's testing out of the states. And we can go ahead.
On the communication side, the group you talked to was the lead group around the neighborhood associations, right? Did they have any targeted associations that they thought would be appropriate for communication?
We asked
for
like a list of
the
associations, and they didn't have that. But David, you talk to
East Minnehaha's homeowner president said that she might want you. And she ended up asking for information from us that she just decided to pass out.
Oh.
But we worked through the PIO office person that was at the NAC meeting that night. He's really helpful if you feel that you need like a list of homeowners. homeowners associations, I bet you he would have that. He's a kind of a community outreach person.
Scott Clements.
Thank you, yes.
Do you guys have any upcoming plans for presentations? It sounds like you guys have got a lot done.
Yeah, I think we're ready to, you know, just bring it on the room whenever we're asked.
Yeah,
I think we did pretty well.
Yeah, as a team, we work really well together.
Yeah.
We've practiced a few times. Jeremy's great. Marie and I work great together. It's fun.
Great. That's really good to hear.
I've been looked in this day on it quite a few, so.
Yeah. And it looks like Jeremy and one of you put together kind of frequently asked questions.
It's the format you have. So we need to start typing it for us and questions.
Sure.
I'm really glad you did because it's not here tonight. I'm glad I printed this out. Yeah.
Perfect. Let's go ahead and move on. Mr. Patterson's not quite here yet, so Dean, if you want to go ahead and talk about the public school district.
Yeah. So we have a clean water fee, obviously, that applies to all residents unincorporated Clark County, and that includes schools, school districts, and all the parcels that they own that have impervious surface on them. Probably most of you at least know Vancouver Public Schools has been sort of the leader in terms of getting clean water fee rebates or credits back from us because of the good things that they're doing. They have the most green schools of any school district in, well, let's see, we have more green schools in Clark County than any other county in the state. And that is something that our former director, Benton, really pushed and sort of helped make happen and made it really a priority. So that's really a big feather in our cap. But I do think that Vancouver Schools, Evergreen is really coming along quickly too. I think a lot of these other school districts have seen Vancouver Schools, who basically in fees are charged approximately $155,000 a year just in clean water fees if you count all the schools in the district. But as a result of being a green school, which basically entails six major elements, you know, down to energy conservation, recycling, reuse, as well as grounds maintenance and stormwater maintenance and programs. And they have to be, those programs have to be audited every year to make sure that they're doing what they say they're doing. And they passed successfully through all those hoops, but their credit, every school is a green school in terms of their elementary schools, but two this year, which resulted in their getting back $115,000 of that $150,000.
Wow.
So most of what they pay has come back to them. So, and that sort of touches a little bit on, I think, what the next, yeah, what I wanted to cover here too is you also see in your packet, we're talking about a related subject. Geyser Middle School is a Green Ribbon Schools Program recipient, which is a national award. There's a letter there, as well as Jefferson Middle School, a handout with the two pictures, the stormwater kind of protection project they did, and the beautiful signage that the kids were responsible for. That was actually partially an Eagle Scout project. So, and lastly, I don't have a picture, but we recently, Andrea and I, largely, we received requests from Wazoo Vancouver because of their program. They're Sand Safe certified, and they've got great stormwater protection programs. In fact, most of the water that they receive from residential areas upland from the university that passes on to their property and exits, they have data showing that the water is dirtier when it comes on to the property and much, much cleaner. So they've got a lot of great successful programs going there. However, institutions of higher education are not they're not positioned to be green schools. That's simply a K-12 program. So they sort of didn't fit in the box we had in these programs, but nonetheless doing the right thing. And so we've gone through several back and forth iterations on this, but we finally, last week, cleaned that up and met with the representative from the chancellor's office. We gave them a SAMI award. Anybody seen those? But beautiful piece of art, nice metal salmon. And they were happy to get that. But the other thing we did was I wrote a letter and committed to them that they would get from here through 2020 when their Salmon Safe certification is up and have to renew it, an 80% discount on their clean water fee. So we're hopefully getting to these other schools as well, even higher education, that are doing the right thing, and we should be crediting them that they're helping clean our stormwater, which is what we all want, and incentivizing that. So those are just kind of some highlights of what's going on in the local community for schools and universities and doing the right thing, and I think that we're getting better about promptly doing the right thing in return.
Great to hear. All right. Well, if no one else has any questions or comments regarding that, we can move on to the biennium budget discussion.
You also should have in your packets this 11 by 17 sheet of paper. Been really steep in this stuff lately. It's not only you doing about everyone is Bob Patterson.
Welcome.
I'll hit on the budget here. One before I get into this too much, since you've not had a chance to look at this, and I believe strongly that Commission should have some input on this. I don't think previously you have. I think it's only fair. I will tell you that the clock's ticking. We're fairly far along the process. This right now is kind of the draft final, and I will tell you I have until next Thursday, close of business, to tweak it however I need to tweak it. And there's a lot of background spreadsheets that support this, sort of a dashboard. But, you have till then, so I guess the point I want to make. If you have any other questions or you see anything that, hey, you might want to think about this, your feedback is invited. And feel free to email me directly or Andrea, and we'll correspond with you that way. But just make sure it happens by next Thursday. So this, what you see in front of you here is the 2718 biennium budget. So we're on a two-year budget cycle here, and you don't need to get too hung up in the grade cells above, other than the descriptions, the numbers and stuff won't mean much to you. But this really gives you a good idea of kind of where we're budgeting our money, and if you have any questions as to why, I'll try to answer them the best I can, just from rote memory.
So the total 13.1 million, 13.2 million, as you recommended, is actually spread over 2 years now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The last cell in the lower right corner is a 2 year.
There's another something that we brought up early in 2014, and it kind of, I think, has kind of disappeared in the backlog. And that's that. At one time when they set the earlier fees in 1998-99 area, they set the fee to include a contingency budget to, because of, you know, the ever increasing regulation, cost of regulations and amount of regulations that require sure that all of our individuals and processes and stuff like that are updated, but also staff and things like that. That contingency fund was used up in an earlier attempt to plant a bunch of trees and things like that that resulted in a federal lawsuit by environmental groups here in the county. And so, just asking, because of the contingencies and the population growth and things like that, is there provision in this thing for a contingency budget?
What you're going to see here is, no, you won't see it here, but what I will tell you is happening is that our revenues from the increased clean water fees, that's the new fee structure that went in place last summer,
Yes. We
are seeing more revenue return on that than we expected, and that's, of course, correlated to population growth and building. And that's great. And so my plan for that is to kind of make whole some pieces here, but my top priority is to get a capital reserve budget in place.
Okay.
Right now, it's very scary having a big goose egg in that column, and I'm getting a lot of support for that.
Okay,
too,
so you're not, it seems like there's two options once you get some extra available money. One is to save it, and the other is to find new inventive needs to spend it. So I'm happy to hear you say that, because I really believe that with the rising population of Clark County and increased environmental laws and other factors that are going on, that we're already seeing that there are deterioration, like you talked about, the water is rising. So if we have something that has a contingency fund that the council has agreed that, hey, we're going to do not touch item for us.
Yeah, I think maybe in lieu of calling it a contingency, it's probably more of a reserve, right?
Reserve fund.
So because what you've got, when is the budget due, or when is the permit up for renewal?
2018.
August. So you can see some. So where are those costs, engineering costs, embedded in? Are they in which line item?
You mean through 2018?
Yeah, for the permit applications and the
clean water capital construction. So
from the left there.
Okay.
The 200,000 engineering, is that what that is?
Yeah.
What does he looking up? I guess one of the questions is this a zero based budget, or is this a rollover? So each biennial you do a zero based.
It's zero based, and when we get our initial allocation from the budget office, it's really kind of based on the previous.
Okay.
Biennial.
Yeah. So the risk of that is you can undershoot things like a permit, write up of a permit application, and so these reserves could be very very helpful.
Yeah.
If you have something like that.
Right.
And $200,000 doesn't seem like enough. We spend more than that. We spend more than that doing the NPDES permit for a little paper now.
I really think it's really constructive.
Yeah.
I know you guys think
keep in mind too. Yeah, that we've got so that's clean water capital construction. That $200,000 would account for private engineers over and above what we
have. Okay. Okay. So your in-house engineers is part of the staff.
Yeah. And then we have professional services object code there on the far left, 410.
Okay.
So you see, and those are kind of spread out.
Are those contracted services?
Yeah.
Yeah, so outside. Actually, what can you tell me about headcount? How many headcount in the whole group?
In our division, it's 18.25. So.
18.2 or 5 or what?
18 and a quarter.
Does that include the administrative staff, the secretary of the whole?
Yeah. That's everyone.
Yeah, okay.
Dean, what would be your situation that we should, that maybe an acceptable reserve would be I think it's really critical to make sure that there is a reserve. You know, even if we have to go back to the council and readjust the clean water piece, because otherwise, you know, it could be in trouble. Do you have a sense of what a decent reserve would be?
Well, in our very simplistic world, we look and see what how much revenue we're pulling in that we didn't anticipate getting. And in my book, besides a few other small amounts that come from that, it's all of it.
It's what?
It's all of it. It's all of that reserve. So if we have, if we pulled in, say, $300,000 more than what we projected we would, I would want to put that in. We have zero right now, and that's very scary. $300,000 doesn't even get you very much.
No.
But that's our first, you know, donation to the kitty, so to speak, and we hope that revenue help continues in the future. We can keep kind of adding to that. Because we do have a lot of uncertainty with every permit cycle, so August 2018, when we get the new one, there's going to be more expensive expectations. There's going to be new priorities, some of which will probably be a surprise, some of which won't, and those that aren't a surprise, we already know are going to cost us a lot of money. For instance, with capital projects, we categorize that in our world, repairs of stormwater facilities versus retrofits of stormwater facilities, and there's different categories. Well, in our NPDES permit, the repairs are king. You need to get on the repairs first before you get to these others. So that tends to, in a capital plan, move those up to the top.
Okay. Yes, like any business, we can have an O&M and an operations and maintenance reserve separate from another reserve for some of these other elements. And, you know, if you're, you know, a private business may be obligated to have those reserves. So having zero is, it is spooky.
Yeah.
So you need it. There need to be some reserve.
Madam Chairman, I would like to suggest that we, for our upcoming yearly report, that depending on what Dean's further comments are, that we make a note that we recommend that the budget should be included, the reserve should be part of the budget, and it should be, you know, even if they have to consider readjusting the stormwater fee, to make sure that we have adequate reserves going in, especially with the new permit process coming up in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to just put that out there and say that when we start our write a report, our annual report, that we review that item and see if that's something that we want to include in that annual report, because I think that would take a little bit of the pressure off of you, too. But I think it's so critical that that adjustment be made in view of the uncertainty of population growth and the other factors coming up. Having an adequate contingency would be critical.
Absolutely. Dina, my question for you, too, is you hypothetically saying that 300,000, or was that a projection of what you think would be put into the net save?
That was hypothetical.
Okay.
Because right now, we have a foggy idea of what that increased revenue amount is, but the budget office is truthing those numbers, and we haven't heard back from them yet, but we'll need to before next Thursday. So I can certainly get that out to you.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. My understanding is in a public policy setting like this, or a public function like this, the budgeting process is really different from, in some ways, from a budget process in a business operation. And that a lot of the time, the way that the budget is driven is that if the spending doesn't keep up with the plan, then some of the budget gets usurped back to the core organizational functions outside of this group. Am I correct in my
In some scenarios, you would be, not here.
Yeah.
that clean water fee is earmarked for clean water functions that can't be taken and used for stuff. We can move shells between columns all we want, but some exterior to clean water, they can't use clean water transfer.
And is the clean water fee the only thing that's contributing to the revenue? Is that what the only thing you're including in this, or?
Yeah, well, we have grant sources, okay, of course, and I should have brought that up earlier. We recently applied, speeds into the bottom line. We recently applied for submitted three grant applications to the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board.
Right.
One was kind of a citizen science one, so Washington State study came out that basically said Washington State monitors 3% of its waters, surface waters, and an independent study basically came back and said, no, it's barely 1%, which is a very low number, and I think a lot of states probably are low numbers. So the whole kind of push for the citizen science application is that we may not have the luxury of having, you know, qualitative or quantitative laboratory-based data for as many waters as we want. It's expensive. There's not that many sample things out there. So let's get citizens and students, high schoolers, and middle schoolers out there, just, you know, doing pH testing, doing turbidity tests, doing visual observations and counting bugs and all those things. And, you know, the true technical scientist is going to cringe at that. But there's more eyes out there, and they're seeing more things in real time, and if there's something like an oil spill or something, they can call the right person and get them out there. So that was the whole gist of that one. So I made a presentation to them on that recently. We also did a downspout disconnect, and basically disconnecting your downspouts in certain neighborhoods and moving the roof water into a rain garden, something like that, into the system. And the third one was a Friends of Trees proposal, which basically planting trees in strategic neighborhoods to help handle stormwater better. And we actually got awarded two of those. We just found that out recently. Two of them, not the citizen science application. So we were pretty happy with that. Out of all the applicants, they awarded six, and we got two of the six. So those will be funds, and those are three-year grants. Not a lot per year. It's $150,000 over 3 years. So we get about between the two, $100,000 a year for 3 years in grant funds that we still need to fold into this table. But besides that, to answer your question, yeah, it's clean water fee-based besides grants, and of course, in Bob's area here, local source control, ecology does issue grants in that program, and right now we're enjoying a $400,000 grant that's over 18 months. That's really funding Bob's program right now.
Here's another question I just thought of since we talked about grants. This lawsuit that was settled in an environmental lab, supposedly $40 million lawsuit, we have, in the settlement, we had the opportunity, you know, we paid in $6 million a year to settle that over,
$6 million, so
$500,000.
Yeah.
But we also have an opportunity to apply for grants for that money, you know, back. Are we taking any liberty in applying for those grants?
Those are the grants I just described.
Okay.
Yeah, Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board, they're the keepers of those grant funds, and they issue the grants.
Okay, awesome.
They make those decisions.
That's awesome. Okay.
So we got some back.
Yeah. Well, I just want to make sure you guys are out of board.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions or comments concerning the budget?
You indicated that there were four people that left the organization. That's been removed from this budget, I'm assuming.
That was never in our budget. That was an administrative budget, which is almost like a separate division.
Okay.
But it's a group from overhead only.
Okay. Well, are you the new Chris Clifford?
No. But I will tell you, you stumbled on a segue for me. Now, Chris is now our former liaison for this group. Our current liaison will be Andrea Lowe here.
Okay.
So, Andrea has got a great skill set, not the least of which are her interpersonal skills, which I'm very confident will
so
make
this
group
well.
I didn't know he was accepted.
Did you have Chris Pierce's phone number? I think we did. At least I did.
I think he did.
I did.
Yeah.
But apparently it's no good anymore.
All right. Well, you got to wrap it up. Welcome to Patterson.
Thank you.
If you're ready, do you want to talk about?
Ready to go?
Yeah.
I didn't get to print with my notes. Is it? Will it show my notes up on the screen?
You should be able to do without. Yeah, I mean you can run the presentation, but then see your notes.
Will notes be on my screen?
Yeah.
That would come in handy because. Notes are just a huge help sometimes. You never get a chance to see some of this stuff when they were going around. This is I wanted to give you a little hands-on display about source control and how it works and what we do. So over here you'll see a lot of the handouts that I use on the table. You'll see spill kits, lids that I hand out to businesses. You'll see pictures, dirty pictures of what I encountered day-to-day when I'm out doing my work, working with businesses doing source control work. So if you didn't get a chance to mill on that before the meeting, come on over and mill on it before you leave, just so I'm just kind of a visual guide. Sometimes it helps just to see some of that hands-on stuff. So
even something as simple as the yellow lid there, I mean, that's a convex-shaped lid with a 55-yard run.
From Missouri, I think.
Okay, well, we're going to try one out of
No, let's just do it. Let's just go.
Okay, no notes.
And you try that quicker. I haven't tried it.
You haven't tried it?
There.
Yeah.
It works.
Okay. Well, that means I can do this from just about anywhere. And I'm not a behind-the-podium kind of guy. Not for a second.
Did you want a hard copy?
No, it's right. Well, do you have my notes?
Yeah.
You get a printout with my notes?
Yeah.
Like, hey, Bob, introduce yourself? That was on slide. Yeah. Did you actually see that?
No.
Did you actually see that?
Yeah.
All right, we're good. Okay, so by way of introduction, I am Bob Patterson. I've worked at DeKalb County for 24 years now. I started out in Kitsap County. I came down here, worked for the health department doing septic systems, kind of solid waste, hazardous waste, and I've been in resource protection for about 24 years now with Clark County. I love working at Clark County, and I love the work I do. I've been doing source control work in the clean water division for about 2.5 years now, and during that time, I've probably visited close to 1,000 businesses spread out over a variety of different watersheds. We spent a lot of money building facilities. We spent a lot of money sampling water. And we spent a little bit of money going door to door, talking to businesses about pollutants that they might be generating during the course of business. And when I say source control, I'm not talking about what you might do at home. I'm not talking about residences. I'm talking about businesses basically doing business on the back of Mother Nature, creating pollutants in the course of their work that might impact our system, or might make its way to the MS4. That's when I go into action.
MS4?
The MS4 is the Mixed Municipal Stormwater System. Close, they get close on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah,
that is our pipes, our catch basins, our discharge points, everything that we have out there, the entire infrastructure we have out there to collect rainwater and to discharge to our rivers, lakes, and streams. And in some cases, even the ground as well. All right, so there are two things that drive source control in our clean water program. First and foremost, it was the permit. Our permit says, and I've got a copy of it right over there leaning against the wall, in Section 5, C5, it says we will visit 20% of our business community during the course of a year. That rounds up to about 400 businesses a year. I think that number is high right now because we're just going for everything. We categorize based on the clean water fee and the business fee of that. There are businesses out there. Question.
You profile the businesses. I mean, obviously, if somebody's, you're not going to put the hot tub stand in the corner.
I might.
Well, yeah. As opposed to somebody who's making some hazardous chemical
right.
or something like that.
So we definitely have our hire for rated businesses. A financial advisor, probably not a big deal. Are we going to give them some clean water information and talk about clean water? Yeah, because they might have another business somewhere else. They might hire a carpet cleaner to come in and clean out their office. We want to make sure that they're doing that right. And the discharge from that carpet cleaning operation goes where it needs to go. They just hire somebody willy-nilly and don't check into that. They could be responsible in a way for getting their carpets cleaned and having it discharged to the storm drain up front. We do have high priority businesses. And those are businesses that are doing things outside. They're businesses that are doing things with hazardous materials or materials that have the potential to pollute the system. So historically, yes, we have to do source control as a phase one permittee. We have to visit 20% of our businesses in our permit area every year. What I want to talk to you about today is our new source control partnership with the Department of Ecology. For over a...
I have not seen.
Really? Ooh. I was doing so good.
Yeah.
I
didn't know what's happening.
The state legislature has historically cut loose about $4 billion of every biennium to support the source control partnership. This is 23 agencies, primarily the Puget Sound area and Spokane. Clark County Clean Water and Clark County Public Health both receive funding for the next 18 months to participate in this partnership. And we expect to be part of this partnership ongoing in the future, now that we've made it inside the inner circle, so to speak. That ups the kind of attention that we would give a business when we do a source control visit. We spend more time inside, we spend more time evaluating the kind of waste that they generate, and we tackle the big nine. That's, I can't tell you what the big nine is right now, all nine of them, but those are things that Ecology has laid out in our contract as a new partner to say, you will go to this business and you will look for these bulletins, you will look for these materials, you will make sure that waste is stored properly, that they're disposed of properly, that they're managed properly. And the way we fix a problem is with a BMP, a best management practice. There's two kinds of BMPs. There's a structural BMP, which might include an awning on the side of the building to keep rainwater off. It might include a giant secondary containment tank to hold materials that are being stored that could have potential pollute. And then there are operational BMPs. Those BMPs are business practices themselves. You don't dump the mop bucket out back at the end of the night. You dump the mop bucket down the mop sink. That's a simple operational BMP.
Question.
Sir,
do you announce your business ahead of time? Or
I don't.
Make it a surprise? Okay.
I don't. I like to see what they're doing. I'm in a situation where if they want to deny entry or they want to deny a visit, I'm more willing to do that. If they want to schedule one, I'll come back for that. There are some agencies that want to schedule it, but when I schedule something, it's clean as a whistle when I get there, and it's perfect. And I want to see what they're doing on a regular day.
Yeah. Not a day after my visit. This is a voluntary, you're helping.
That's right. And,
so there's no,
and I should step back and say, I am not in a regulatory position. I am in an educational outreach, let's get this right kind of position.
Well, businesses should you know, if they can accommodate, you know, your visit from a safety standpoint, they should be willing.
And when you want my people skills on top of that,
yeah, yeah.
My dynamic personality,
probably bring donuts.
They're offering me coffee and lunch.
And charming, and you're not a regulator.
So we've joined the 23 agencies in the Puget Sound area and Spokane, and it's a great place to be because it comes with money, it comes with skill kits. You see skill kits over the wall. Ecology mailed me 50 skill kits. So here, pass them out. It comes with an equipment budget where we're able to go out and buy 100 of those lids. And I'll talk about those in a little bit. So there's some perks that come with it, for sure. So
What I spend most of my time doing here is 70 to 75% is on-site with businesses. We have some unique program elements in our contract with Ecology, and some of those are spelled out a little bit ahead here. I'll get into those as we get to it. And then one part of being part of the team here and the partnership is training, ongoing training. I get training every month via a web connection. I'm connected to these 23 other partners around the state that are doing the same work. And when I have a success story like this LIV program right here, I don't know any of the 23 partners that are doing that. I'm going to go and present that to the rest of them, and I'll bet you they're all spying LIVs like crazy by the end of the year. So that yellow LIV there, you'll see what I have is I have two pictures, a before and after. A lot of businesses use drums, 55-gallon drums. They use it for waste oil, they use it for cooking oil, they use it for waste oil filters, they use it for dirty metal parts that they're going to recycle. You can go to about just any auto business and find a 55-gallon drum out back. And often it's not uncovered. But when it is covered, it usually has a metal lid like the picture on the top, which holds about an inch and a half of rainwater. And it's all dirty and icky. When you go to take it off, you spill a bunch of rainwater back down into the barrel, and you're just making a mess. The plastic lid you see below, and the one you see over here on the wall, is a snap lid that goes over the top and sheds rainwater. So it keeps rainwater out of the barrel, and it helps keep the contents in the barrel as well. Keeps it from overflowing. What got me going on this was Department of Ecology. When they come into a big business and they issue an industrial stormwater permit, the first thing they do is they put lid on all their drop boxes. They put lids on all their 55-gallon drums. They cover everything because if it's not covered, it's going to shed pollutants. So when I go to an industrial stormwater permitted site by the State of Ecology, every 55-gallon drum outside has a yellow snap lid like that on top. And what got me going with this was I was at an oil change place in Salmon Creek, and I walked out back, and he had two 55-gallon drums full of oil filters and full of rainwater because there were no lids on them. I said, where are your lids? He said, the metal tweakers keep stealing. They don't want the oil filters, they want the metal lid because they throw it in their truck. When they get enough metal in their truck, they get $300 for, you know, a load or something like that. So he said, I can't keep lids. Someone keeps coming to steal my metal lids. I showed up with two of those yellow lids. He was a happy guy. And no more rainwater in the barrel. Technical assistance visits. Number one, stop the discharge of waste into the system. Inspect the facility for its potential to pollute. And in this case, we have another project as a unique element where we're looking at oil water separators around the county, the way they're used, the way they're not used, the way they're maintained. Just this year, we had a Washington State University intern, Kate, who spent a lot of time finding new oil, the water separators that we didn't know existed. You see over here in the top middle, you'll see a couple pictures of oil water separators that aren't working. If you look at that one on the right with a little red line on the end of it, that line goes directly to the MS4. So it's kind of like having a diaper and not changing it. So if you've got a tool like that, you need to maintain it, you need to keep it clean, you need to go get that oil out of it. Otherwise, you're just flushing the oil through.
Thanks for the graphic.
Sorry. You blame that on Rod Swanson.
You did say you were a visual guy.
Are you familiar with Rod Swanson? You know Rod Swanson? He coined that term. It's a diaper game change. The gentleman here in the picture, I walked up to do a source control visit. He was cleaning off a greasy bumper right over a catch basin. That catch basin goes right to Salmon Creek, right there. So that's the kind of stuff I'm out to stop. I'm out to make a change. I'm out to make a difference. I got a fun job. Technical assistance visits. Again, draining directly in the MS4. Recently, just in the last year or two, we took on something that I call pollution by design. Here's our earth-friendly, sustainable green Burgerville up in Salmon Creek. The red box in the middle shows their enclosure. We historically, through the design process, have given businesses a place to wash, a wall to wash behind, a place to keep your garbage, your grease, your waste oil. And then the lower picture with the green bucket in it, you'll see there's the water right there. So we gave them a hose, we gave them a drain, we gave them a wall to work behind, and we gave them a place to do all their dirty work. And that drain right there goes directly to the MS4. It was work like this that got our design manual to change. And that design manual over there
We included a new BMP, but we also included a new design requirement.
What does BMP stand for?
Best Management Practice. There'll be a quiz at the end. There's two kinds of BMP. Everybody remember the two kinds of BMPs?
Structural
and operational.
There you go. All right. So we are not building traction closures like that anymore. We are asking that drain to be a dead end sump that's hydrologically isolated like an island with a roof over the top of it. And if you want to wash your dirty rugs out back, if you want to lose track of your grease and your junk and your oil and your cigarette butts, you can do it all in a little box that you have to pump out at the end of the day. Because that drain cannot go back to the MS4. That's a permit violation.
One quick kudo too. Bob works pretty closely with Waste Connection on leaking dumpsters. A lot of these businesses that have dumpsters that aren't sealed properly, and you know, leachate come out the bottom and again into the drain that drains the MS4.
Yep. Improper storage. Hey, we're going to recycle all these batteries. We're going to get the lead out of them and we're going to make some money off them. A quick fix for your pickup truck there full of lead batteries is just a tarp. That's an activity that should be happening indoors. But if you've got to do that outdoors and you're in business, don't do it on the back of the system. Get a tarp over it and make sure that all the stormwater leaving your business is clean. Again, the barrels on the left. The barrels are a big one for us this year. Here's a couple graphics for you. I lifted the boat picture on the right, but here are vehicle washing and washing outside are two things that we crack down on. That drain to the left there is not your personal, it's not sanitary sewer. If you're going to wash vehicles, if you're going to wash off degreasers and oils and auto shine and tire shine and all that soap, that needs to go to sanitary sewer. That cannot go to the system. Those are some of the things we're trying to fix. The picture on the right, just a classic failure on the part of that guy clean up that. He had his potato bales out. He had good intentions. He was going to try to capture all that, but you see the drain in the foreground. That's the picture I did. That's the only picture in this presentation that didn't come from Clark County.
Now, I get the vehicle washing. We have a communication team. We go out, not that often, but occasionally. And we talk to some, we talk to people about, you know, some of the issues with stormwater with respect to coming off the rooms and picking up the, you know, the antifungal stuff that people spray on the roofs and fertilizer in the yards and you know, mound up and all of these other kinds of things that can get into the stormwater system. Should we be augmenting that and talking to people about washing their cars out in front of their house and suggest that maybe they might want to take it over to one of the drive-through car wash places? You're going to be a lot more tuned into.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Three things in that regard. First thing, get it on the grass. Get off your pervious surface. Get up on your lawn. Do it there. Yeah. Second of all, get it to a car wash. First and foremost, wash without soap. Tap water is an acceptable discharge. So non-contact cooling water, condensate from refrigeration equipment, those are all acceptable discharges.
Are there biodegradable type soaps?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I get that question every week of my life.
I bet you do.
And I sell it, I say, have you got a fish tank? Have you ever had a fish tank? Mm-hmm. Anybody ever had a fish tank?
No.
Okay. Would you put that biodegradable soap in your fish tank?
No.
Okay. That's where I go. If you wouldn't put it in your fish tank at home, you don't want to put it down the drain. We have another alternative, too, and it's a charity car wash. I have one flyer over here. We started that about 2 years ago. We had a business in Highway 99, 99th Street, Bartolome's Pizza. Everybody been to Bartolome's Pizza? Okay. Great place, great corner for charity car wash. Had them every week. Lots of suds, lots of soap, going right to the MS4. My colleague Carrie Armstrong went in there and shut them down. Okay? And everybody's boo-hooing, hey, it's a charity car wash. So you know what? Let's try it right. So we went in there with a vinyl mat, we plugged the drain, we threw a pump down, we got permission from the Hazeldale Sewer District, and we pumped all that dirty wash water right to their sanitary sewer connection. So we have a green car wash kit that we loan out, we have a few more that we're going to buy, and we have a little flyer on how to do a green car wash, where you can actually pump the wastewater to sanitary sewer, because that's where it's belonging.
Okay.
Cool.
What? You know what? We've been able to. The sewer district is going to say, you know, I got a plan, I got a permit, I got a waiver. We've worked with that, and we've been doing that for them. In two cases, Bob's Paintland has been successful with this, and Bartholomew's Pizza are calling those two champions of the charity car wash right now.
Well, the two kind of organizations that I've been just recollecting, right? Schools and churches.
Yep.
They all want to do their charity car washes, you know, right in their parking lot. And it may or may not be training appropriately. How do we go about what's the best way for us to notify those kinds of groups that they have an obligation?
2 weeks ago, Chuck's Produce had a charity car wash. Chuck's Produce in Sand Creek, you're familiar with them? They're an LID site. They've got all this impervious surface. They've got all these nice stormwater features. And then what do? They have a charity car wash right in the middle of it. And they're 200 feet away from a county facility, stormwater facility. Talked to the manager. He's familiar with what kind of site he operates. We looked at the site. He said, this is where you could have sand. This is where you could do it. Well, that's out back. Nobody's going to see it. He says, you know what? I'm not going to do it. Then the word got to the other Chucks in Vancouver, and they called me the next weekend. So I had a permit. It's like, you're in the city of Vancouver. You got to talk to the city about your charity car wash.
Is that something that when you guys, with the making the schools green and they get a reduction in their clean water fee, is that something, information we give them? So if they're like bands or whatever having car washes, that they're aware?
I would hope so. I can't tell you for certain because the Green Schools coordinator is in solid waste.
Mm-hmm.
But because most of the Green Schools are elementary,
mm-hmm.
There's not really a...
Mm-hmm.
They're not
so even though the program's K-12, it's usually elementary.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's occasionally high schools here and there, but that's a good one for me to know.
But again,
the co-washes that business and the schools themselves. Well, if they could rent, the schools were where they could rent the green car wash thing ahead.
They can get the kids. We'll give them a
kit. But again, the point isn't to stop them from having their fundraisers. The point is to help them to do it the right way.
So in our pilot project, we went to Bartholomew's and we did it right. We had some cheer team come in. They made a ton of money. They pushed it as a green car wash.
Yeah.
So that was an advantage.
Only green car show.
More letters.
Can't hurt. Still containment and hanging on. Look, there's the port of Camas, Washougal Airport. Hey, bring your used oil here. If you focus in on the end of that container, it's all going in the box and it's all coming out the bottom. Best intentions, but one of the things we do is we make sure that our businesses are spill ready. Every business we go to that handles materials and fluids like this, if they don't have a spill kit, we give them one. 76 station here on the right, classic example of a pump failure. I went there for another reason, and I was on the job. I stopped by there to look at their oil water separator. I walk around the corner, and there's diesel all over the ground. And they weren't even using their spill kit. I jumped in and started grabbing some more. That is a channel drain that goes around the gas station and goes to an oil water separator before it goes to storm. So they have some protection in place, for sure. Some of the things we're finding. My first year on the job was the year of garbage dumpsters and trash compactors. Every garbage can in Clark County has to have a lid on it. It has to be watertight. It has to be rodent-proof. And when you take garbage and you put it in a compactor, especially from a grocery store, with maybe a pallet full of milk, and then you put it under 3,000 pounds of pressure, and your seal's not working, you're going to squeeze it all out to that storm bin right there on the right. In this case, that's a Safeway right behind Cougar Creek. Everything going down that drain went about 100 yards over Cougar Creek. We moved in there. We got their seals fixed. We got them all cleaned up. And we'll be going back next year to make sure the seals are still working. Trash compactors are a problem. I haven't seen one yet that didn't make a mess, to be honest with you. There's a lot of wet in the trash. And when you put it under 3,000 pounds of pressure, you're going to separate those two materials. There's different. I could do a whole course on it on trash compactors and how they work and how they don't work and how they have the potential to pollute. One of the things I keep reminding businesses, like, you're doing all the right stuff inside, and then you bring it outside and make a mess with it. open drop boxes. I had a business once who had all this filter system going inside, all this dust and all this beautiful system filters for trapping all this dust and all these particulates, and they took it outside and threw it in an open drop box with a crack on the end of it that big, and it got rained on and it all washed out the end. You know what I mean? So again, we can go through all this housekeeping stuff on the inside, but a lot of times we don't look around outside and see what's going on. That's what I do. So, every year we replace about 50 dumpsters in the program. That's on average. We're going to bust that wide open this year because I was at Meadowood Apartments a few weeks ago and 29 drop boxes similar to this had a 3-inch hole in the bottom of all of them.
What?
No, a
grill?
A plug hole in the bottom.
It's their own person was open now.
Wide open. That big. 29 boxes.
Plug was missing.
Well, what?
The plug
was missing. And the lids were wide open. And so they're just rinsing garbage. So when we see a deficiency, again, Dean mentioned we have a great relationship with Waste Connections. A business could call and say, hey, I've got a lousy dumpster that's not working right. They might charge them $25 to get it replaced. I call them, it's done in a week. So about 50 dumpsters a year get fixed through the program, on average, about 5 compactors. Messy grease, cooking oil. You know, we love those onion rings, we love those burgers, we love all that great stuff, but there's a lot of waste oil that comes with it. And what does it do? It comes from inside the building to outside the building. Sir?
It used to be, a while about maybe 10 years ago or more, there was a big movement to collect all that cooking oil and make fireworks. And that seems to have gone by the way.
No, that's out there. They're doing a good job. And we got Oregon Oils, we got Sequential Fuels, we got Medallion, we got a lot of waste oil people in town. Here's Medallion right here. Take a look at that one before you leave. That's called barrel bumping. One of these two haulers hit a loaded barrel and knocked out about 20 gallons of cooking oil because it was loaded to the brim. And they weren't getting enough service on their waste oil. I have picture after picture after picture of waste oil that was intended for the biodiesel world. And yeah, is that a good thing? Yeah, that's a great thing. But when it's not managed properly,
I don't see the publicity or the articles or anything about the biodiesel.
You know, some of the new restaurants, again, design fixes this. A lot of new restaurants are keeping their oil inside now in a big tank. And the oil pump will come up to connect to the side of the building, pump out all their waste cooking oil, and drive off.
Okay.
So, but we still have barrels all over Clark County. We still have receptacles like this all over Clark County. Some work, some don't work. And all oil and grease eventually turns into solid at this level. So, icky stuff. Fueling. Fuels. The tank on the right, I'm still getting fixed, but you can see no secondary containment. You can see these barrels outside, not undercover, no spill control, no drip control. This is just an example of a housekeeping issue that we fix on a regular basis. That big one on the right, that's the fire district's, the fire marshal's helping me with that one because it's a non-conforming tank. If that thing got hooked by, it's right on a roadway, if it got hooked by a truck, it'd go down and you have 300 gallons of diesel on the ground, and it's about 100 feet to a catch basin that goes right to surface water. So these are the kind of risks that we don't want to put the system up against. Sometimes you got to have a right tool for the job. I got a few tools over here. We're pulling lids, we're pulling grates, we're looking for pollution wherever it might pop up from a business. A lot of times pollution comes off the roof. We don't get up on the roof, we can't see it, but it'll surface down below. So if we've got fugitive emissions, rogue emissions, particulates hitting the roof, washing off the roof, it's going to come down the side of the building through a downspout, and it's going to surface here. Sometimes you just got to have the right tool for the right job. Washing, again, this gets back to the enclosure. McDonald's here has a great deal. They've got a nice little compactor back there that leaks, and they've got lots of bread racks and rugs and mats to wash out. And every week they get out there with their hose, and they work this way. The alternative, a dry sweep. That's the alternative. When you add water to a problem like that, 9 times out of 10, you're making a bigger problem. Here's those unique program elements in our contract with Ecology that I referenced earlier on. One, we said we are going to stay NPDES Phase 1 compliant throughout this contract with you for the next 18 months. We're going to support a green business program that we have here and we started here in our solid waste program that is moving to health, but it's still part of Clark County. And when I see a business that's doing things right, I will say, look, you ought to be a green business, and they can take it to the next level. It's nice to have a carrot when you walk around with a box full of sticks to get your job done. It's nice to have a few carrots to hand to people. Our oil water separator enhancement program, we were able to identify about 10 to 15 new oil water separators that we didn't even know existed. Historically, a fueling station, a site with a lot of traffic, design would say you need to have an oil water separator that pop in. Did it have any sort of design requirements? How much flow does it take? Where does it take flow from? There's so many unanswered questions. But we are putting polygons around these oil water separators that we're mapping now, and we're inspecting them with the, as a business facility now. So we're seeing a lot of oil water separators that we didn't even know existed getting regular maintenance. That's a good thing. We promised them in our contract that we would develop our mobile business inventory. What you see on the right here is a carpet cleaner. I rolled up in the car, and her worker was inside pumping water outside as fast as they could get it. And then right here, she's back washing her filter, and she's sending it all to the parking lot. In her hand is her filter, and with her bare hands, she's picking out cat hair and things that were picked up in the carpet. And she put that down, pulled out a cigarette with the same hand, lit it up, and started talking to me. So, clearly, she didn't really care, and she didn't see the problem. So it took a while to explain to her what exactly was going on here. We have mobile businesses from Oregon, from Seattle to Salem, that come into our permit area, do their work, and leave. They might be power washers, they might be hood cleaners, they might be carpet cleaners, they might be all kinds of mobile washers, people who use water. We are building an inventory of those mobile businesses so that we can reach out to them and say, look, when you're doing business in Clark County, here's where the wastewater goes. Pilot monitoring support is a whole other thing that's coming our way right now. With the money that we received for local source control, Ecology got over $600,000 to spend the way they wanted to. They hired a person, and they're planning a monitoring project here in the area that's going to flush out over the next 2 to 5 years, probably.
So this means it's a pilot program.
It's
to support
local
the idea of monitoring.
No, I'm sorry, to support source control, local source control, to show that local source control works. So right now, Ecology and their new staff member are working with us to identify some sites, some business sites, where they can look at outfalls and say, these are the kind of pollutants we're finding in water, these are the kind of pollutants we're finding in sediments from this business area. We need a control group. We need a few businesses that are all similar in nature. And then we're going to do some sampling over the next year and a half. And then we're going to do some source control work. And then we're going to do some more sampling. And hopefully Ecology will present a nice little report about Southwest Washington, specifically Clark County, about how source control works. So,
Bob, do you have an obligation to the DOE to, let's say you run into a business like this mobile business, and they just refuse to change their way to correct their behaviors, implement, best management practices. Do you have an obligation then to inform the DOE that you have a kind of a non-conforming behavior?
I don't know how long you've all been on the commission, but if you remember the EPA audit we had a year and a half ago, I think it was. Does anybody get something to anybody? We welcomed EPA down to do an audit on our program. And one of the things EPA recommended was that we use progressive enforcement to reach compliance with businesses that weren't conforming. I have the ability to write a notice and order. And it's basically just puts you on notice. That's the first step in the process that says, you've got a problem here and you violated either Clark County's Clean Water Code or our permit. We use Chapter 13 on our code. So we would call that, I would call that clean water violation. Like, say you have a floor drain here that's connected to an outside catch basin that discharges to Salmon Creek. I would call that a violation, especially if I saw them dumping materials down that drain. I would give them a note. I would say, look, plug that drain right now. And that's some of the things we've been doing, is plugging floor drains all over town. The owner says, no, I'm not going to do that. That's my drain. You can't let me do that. I write him a notice of order. I go back and say, look, you got to fix this in 30 days, 60 days. That, hopefully that gives them a little giddy up, because I wrote one to Fred Meyer once, and she looked at it and just threw it right in the recycle bin, right in front of me. She said, we don't need that. I'm going to fix your problem. I'm like, all right, that's your problem. If that doesn't work, we've got a drummer in our program named Scott. He's a real burly dude, and I wouldn't want to mess with Scott. And Scott has the ability to say, that's going to cost you $250 if you keep doing that. And that will be the next level for us. And usually, and that could turn into $250 every time he sees the violation. And at that point, we don't have to go, we rarely have to go that route.
That's good. It's a good approach. I think we're obligated to do that. I mean, the counties are obligated to do that.
I've walked into business with pictures of the problem, put it on the counter in front of them, and they take it like, no problem, we'll fix that right now. This is our image. We don't want the world to see this. There's Kate and our oil water separator project. Again, we identified about 15 oil water separators new that exist. She's in front of a very nice, clean one right now. And I like to see these things I look for on the inside of a box that says this is being monitored, this is being well taken care of. One of the things, if you just look down, this it says training. That's one of the things. We have an in-person training. We do two or three of those a year where I go or we present. We have yet to present as we're new partners. But as we get to that, I'm sure this group will be made aware of our up-and-coming presentation to all the partners that want to travel to Southwest Washington and get training. So I do a regular monthly training on the web, and I do a quarterly in-person training. Might be in Bellingham, might be in Lacey. Tell them that's okay, that's the ways to go. But ecology pays for those trainings as well. And then regular partner trainings, that's what I was referring to there. So I've got a potpourri of flyers over here, tools that I use for specific industries. Landscapers have their own set of problems, and we try to address that this way. We have, you know, the road mop-up, it is a problem. It's full of soapy stuff, it's full of bleach, it's full of all kinds of greasy, icky stuff. Jane and our departments put together a variety of publications for us that we can just slap on the door in English, in Spanish, in Russian. The Keep a Lid on It program is brand new. I've only given out about a dozen lids so far.
Now, a lot of these photographs are showing drains without the painted notification that this is a stormwater.
Yep.
Is that something that we've got interest in updating those drains and those signages? So
I've got some help over here. I know we've got the templates that we hand out for businesses. I know in our green business program, that's one of the things we require, that they stencil or that they medallion all their storm drains. I do have some medallions that I hand out. Pass that around and take a look at it. Have you ever been to a storm drain or catch basin where it was just kind of hard to see what was going on?
Mm-hmm.
And do you wonder where all the paint went? I think it went down the storm drain. Don't you think? So the problem with stenciling is that you got to stay on top of it. It doesn't always work. And these medallions have a little longer shelf life. You can see in the top right-hand corner where the red stuff's going, you can see that one has a medallion on it. A lot of people dump stuff down the storm drains and do it at night when they can't read, or maybe they just can't read anyway. But it doesn't hurt. Stenciling's great. Stenciling's been around for a long time. Stenciling's not going to go away. Do I require it? No. Does our green business program require it? Yes. Is it a good idea? You bet.
We have a stenciling kit that we will loan out to schools or Eagle Scouts or whatever. So we have those materials.
And that's still on the website, right? Environmental Services website. I don't know if that's changed yet. But for volunteers that can do something.
Yeah, I hope yes is the correct answer there. That migration took place, you know, the eve before July 1.
Right.
And we're noticing some holes and broken links, so, but
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are things you can do.
Yeah.
In Clark County, we have 80% of the population is Spanish. Do you have these available in Spanish as well?
I don't know. Notice up. I'll find out.
It's a curiosity question more than anything else.
So
I know that we have other communities that speak Eastern European languages, but I'm acutely aware of the Hispanic community.
Okay.
One other efficiency. I'm sorry, just to throw this in. Joining Public Works now on roads projects, and we do road projects. We basically have the roads crew putting these on the curb while they're out there. So.
Nice.
It would be nice for you to see if companies that make the swim drains did it all around the edge there. That level is maybe hard to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The people may not always sure like what it means, you know, not put it together.
Yeah, put that in
well, like international road signs, we need to educate people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all used to, like, for example, okay, we're all used to the idea. If you go anywhere in the world, and I've been all over the world, but if you go anywhere in the world, an octagon painted red is a stop sign. Anywhere you go. It doesn't make any difference what language it's in. You know what it is because it's an octagon and it's red. It's shaped the same way. And you know what you have to do.
Dave, you made a really good point, though.
Yeah.
Do you think for the communication committee that you guys can include that? Just that initial educational piece in there?
Yeah, and I think it's something we should all be working towards and try to do something to, you know, improve the way that everyone. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Awesome. If you look at that center picture there with the door, it's got the poster on it. I have three, you mentioned Spanish, I have three chronic mop bucket dumpers. I mean, it was like strings out the back door, mop strings out the back door, mop material on the ground. I mean, three chronic mop bucket dumpers. And they were all Mexican restaurants.
Yeah.
And I think it's cultural. And one of them had a mop sink, had a floor sink in their facility. I'm like, why are you putting it here when you couldn't put it here?
Right. And not to make it sound inappropriate, but a significant number of the low-wage workers don't necessarily know how to read or how to...
Right. I mean, that poster's right on the door, and there's a catch basin where they're dumping it right outside.
Yeah.
And that's in Spanish. But
I'm sure that it helps over time, but
yeah,
probably have to drag them over to take a look at it and explain it anyway.
And in the food industry, managers change every month, every 6 months, every year. Employees are changing.
So what about the business owners? I mean, it's the responsibility of the business owner to make sure that their business is in line. Not the mock boys, okay? And, you know, they have a language problem, you know, but that doesn't mean they have the responsibility. Why are they not being held accountable for this mess?
Or Wisconsin? Yeah, maybe. You know, you can talk to the employee on the loading dock and say, fix this, but if you never make it up to the top of the head office, you may never see a change. So, yes, we try to get these messages out from all the way from the bottom to the top of the org chart.
You have to hold accountable to people who have control over the outcome.
True.
Yeah.
There's only way to do that in banking law.
Well, here's a good example of holding people accountable. In 2015, towards the end of 2015, we did a project with source control and a condition of permit where we would survey, teach, and survey again. We visited 53 fueling stations in Clark County to assess their spill readiness. We did a pre-survey with them. We did some education, and we did a post-survey with them. In the post-survey, about all 53 fueling stations had different employees and different contact people. With a fueling station in Clark County, you can go in there to buy some beer, cigarettes, and a lotto ticket, and you're going to pay for your gas in there. But the person who runs the till for your M&Ms and your lotto ticket doesn't care what you do outside because they don't make money on the gasoline. There's a disconnect here between the corporate world, who makes all the money on the gasoline at the pump, and the person or the franchisee, that 7-Eleven business owner who's selling stuff, it's like, I don't care what you do at the pump, I lose money out there. There's a real disconnect there.
So legislatively, so if I drive over to Oregon, which I do,
and
people
want to make a note that we have Oregon here,
when I go to Oregon, there's somebody that works at every gas station that fills my tank for me. I'm not allowed to. Over here, it's a little different. It's like California, and there's a lot of us that, without, I don't do this now, but previously used to. I'd let it run to the end, and then I'd try to top it off, and inevitably there'd be a little bit of a spill.
Right.
Past life. I don't do that now, but I presume that there probably are a lot of people that continue to do that. What legislatively can we do to encourage the state of Washington legislature to make it so that we're doing the same like Oregon? We've got employees that are filling tanks. They know how to do it to avoid the spills and reduce the amount of stormwater pollution or pollution to the waterways.
Okay, you want to take that one?
That's
a good one. That's a tough one.
Yeah. I think some of those things, right? It's just education
to
the public.
The way our gas stations are set up right now, the drunks are filling up their tanks at 2 in the morning and driving off and ripping off the hoses.
Oh,
that happens all the time.
Legislation,
yeah.
Not that.
If we have legislative requirements that employees only are allowed to fill the tanks, no individuals are, then the employees are not going to, they better not be drunk working on the job.
You know, you bring up a good point. If there was a person out there doing that work, that would make a difference.
But once again, that's the responsibility of the person who owns that facility. And until you get serious, like having something like this, it may have to go before a judge. And there's consequences for it. As long as there's never any consequences, you're never going to get any judge. So, rather than mandating an employee, having an owner have to go before a judge or something like that and explain it and face the consequences is, I think, the only way. Let them do the business like they think, but hold them responsible. And that person has to go explain it to the judge why they have that violation of our environmental laws.
Well, I'm in favor of creating jobs, so I don't mind paying an extra.
All right, we're going to do a little out of track. Let's let Austin show me one more item.
We're done.
Okay.
I just want you all to know that we have this program, and the idea here, Dean, was to connect with the commission and give you some hands-on feeling for what we're doing in water. I think you've got all access to my contact information. I'd love to come back in a year from now and talk about what we did last year and some of our success stories. So I just want you to know that there are people out there in the program working with the business community to keep the system as pollutant-free as possible. Our last slide here, that is a waste enclosure, and that is Cougar Creek right there. And that means every drop of rain that's hitting that waste enclosure and all the yuck that is washing out of that waste enclosure is going right to Cougar Creek. This is a design, pollution by design issue, Should that be somewhere else? Yes. Should that have a roof over it? Yes. Should those lids be closed all the time? Yes. Should those containers be watertight? You bet. But when we, it kind of speaks for itself. Jane picked that one up and said, you got to show this one. Because how many people are putting trash enclosures on outcroppings right over Hoover Creek? So,
yeah.
So we're out there working with back to BMPs, structural BMPs. We put a roof over that. Operational BMPs would have an employee closing that lid every night to make sure the stormwater stays out.
Mm-hmm. Somebody has to go up there and lock that container where most businesses have lost. So itinerant people can't go along there and fill their dumpsters. Somebody has to lock that.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a lot of trash bins that are not locked. I'd say 10% of headlocks.
Really?
Yeah. Depends on your location. So.
Feel free to contact me anytime. And I'd ask you also then to think about how we can help you. If there's anything that this council, you know, you see a role in touch of being, find out if there's something that we should be thinking about or doing, it can come to everyone. Because it's, to me, it's vital. It's been very important.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very relevant what you're talking about.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I did a stormwater permit, industrial stormwater permit, when I was in school.
Oh, for a business? Or for a
Yeah, for a fake business.
For a fake business.
For a fake business. So this was really interesting.
So you know then that the industrial stormwater permit, you have a stormwater plan,
mm-hmm.
you have regulating, monitoring,
right.
you're covering everything, you're sweeping your parking lots,
yep.
you're putting filters on your downspouts to catch road particulates. I mean, every business should have some sort of industrial stormwater.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good experience to see what ecology requires.
Yeah.
I believe we have about 460 industrial stormwater permits in this region. A lot of that includes the city of Vancouver as
yeah.
well.
And did you guys process those, or is that
fine? No. With our partnership with ecology, they want us to stay out of that. But since we carry the other handle of we have responsibility as a permittee, I'll go anywhere. So
yeah.
If you see a big mess out there somewhere in the business community, say, you know, that's a bop at that. We can throw some bop at that. You don't really need to call it. You know? Because we're fixing this one drip at a time.
Yeah.
You know? It's not to convince you as presented in a presentation. I mean, one or two illicit connections that Bob finds out in the field, you know, you can imagine the help that is to our stormwater surface waters versus, you know, copper and zinc dust and sources of that. We're getting way over here, and then, you know, he finds a drain that goes right to a creek, and that's huge.
A few success stories: Alpine Auto and Hazeldale. They did a wash station that connected right to stormwater. That all should go to sanitary sewer.
Yeah.
We walk in there like, this doesn't look right. They did a dye test. It's over on the wall. We fixed that. We found. During the dry, you know, I do some eddy work too, illicit discharge work. So when I see stuff flowing in the heat of August, my flags go off. And so I staged that. I found a few sewer connections, both busted pipelines that were going to stormwater. I plugged a lot of floor drains. It's rewarding. I worked in the Green Business Program on the inside all for several years. And you'd show up at a big business and they'd be all happy to see you talking about what you're doing, and now people aren't so happy to see me, but I get some real tangibles done when you can say, enough of that, that's not going to happen anymore.
Contact information is not on the slide.
It's not on that slide, but if you're familiar with our website, I'm there, and in your follow-up meeting notes, or your notes from the meeting, we can include my contact information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
So, very quickly,
yeah.
I'll just throw out a teaser. We talked the last couple of meetings about field visits to facilities, and I guess I wanted to make sure we're happy to plan that, how that looks, but I want to make sure that we're visiting facilities that are of most interest. You want to see, you know, successfully functioning facilities versus failing ones, or do you want to, I mean, what do we want to see? Because we're talking about maybe,
you know, I'd rather see
two to four or three to four
ones, gives us an idea of what, you know, what the real scope of, you know, upcoming projects or things like that might be working versus success is, you know, it's already a winner. idea of where the work is. Not, you know, success has already been done, but the work is at the, I think, my opinion, because I don't want anybody else.
I would love to see a mixture of both. Yeah.
Okay. It's good to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments?
Maybe one that needs to be on your list of things that need to be repaired, because you said that was on the list.
Yes, we've got a 9 or 11 of 54 or so that, you know, repairs haven't yet got to. Okay.
All right. We skipped over public comments because there's still no public. motion to adjourn this meeting. All in favor?
Aye.